All right, you're on the Armstrong Show with Glenn.
Andrew.
And it is just the two of us today, this week, I should say. Forever. Thanks to all of our patrons. What's that? Forever? I guess I did sign up for that.
Yeah.
All right. I'm okay with it. Thanks to all of our patrons for supporting the show. Thank you for supporting our community service efforts in our communities and your communities as we travel. Without you guys, we wouldn't be able to do so much free training for schools and churches and our annual or our monthly, Stop the Bleed trainings. All that stuff is thanks to you guys. So thank you. And if you're listening to the show and you think you get something out of it, please consider becoming a patron. You can go to Patreon. You can look up the Arms Room Show. And please consider joining and become a monthly patron. It's a buck. $10 is our highest. Come on, man.
It is.
We need it, quite honestly, to keep going.
Yes.
Without your support, the show doesn't continue. That's all there is to it.
And letting us know how we're doing.
Yeah. We always like when you guys shoot us emails. info@trainingaz.com, of course, is the easiest way to get a hold of us. Yep. Feel free to contact us any time you want. Roe versus Wade, of course, getting overturned, doing all kinds of crazy things in the political market. I don't want to talk about that other than two things. One, I believe in my heart, without religion, without consideration to being a father, without any of those kind of things, I believe in my heart that killing babies is wrong. Now, with that said, I don't want the government in my business. This is a state's issue. Always has been, always should be. It should not be a federal issue. If you think it's a federal issue and you want the federal government in your business, maybe you haven't been paying attention recently. You want these people in your business? Nothing. I'm to the point of nothing should be legislated. Look, this is a societal problem. This is a result of the breakdown of the family. This is a result of the breakdown of education. This is a result of the breakdown in strong fathers and strong mothers. This is a result of the breakdown in values and morals. People think that you're going to get ethical and moral results by turning over legislative processes to an unethical and immoral government. When we no longer have that, we might be able to get ethical and moral results. And at that point in time, I'd be willing to consider allowing a governing authority to legislate my own personal decisions. But up until then, no. This is a state's issue. It is not a federal government issue. It just isn't. And you shouldn't want it to be. Now, the second thing about that was watching the differences in the Capitol riots. You had LA where cops are going hand to hand with people. You have Portland where cops are going hand to hand with people. You have the Arizona Capitol, which I got to see firsthand. That's a story for another time. But yeah, that was over. There's a lot of videos going around. It looked really neat, guys. But let me tell you what, that shit was fucking over fast. All right. It was over pretty quickly. And the grounds were cleaned up and taken care of relatively quickly. The shitheads did deface some monuments and things like that down at the Capitol, but that is what shitheads do. What amuses me is you have a whole bunch of, gangly little Antifa-type males worrying about abortions for women they'll never impregnate. I don't understand why. I do understand, but I don't understand why they're down there. I don't understand why people don't see what's going on here. Anyways, the Arizona Capitol, let me tell you, our Department of Public Safety police officers or state troopers did a fantastic job of turning the tide down there.
There's a photo going on right now of a gal who's pregnant, who looks probably 7 or 8 months pregnant. Mm. And on her belly, she wrote, "Not a living thing," I think is what she wrote. Not okay. A real person.
Oh, perfect.
I can't remember what she wrote.
I'm sure her child will love that when it's born.
Oh, here it is. "Not yet human." And she wrote it on, she was like 8 or 9 months pregnant.
Well, in my heart, I would like to slit that bitch's throat. if she's actually 7 or 8 months pregnant, we should probably.
I mean, she looks like
we could probably take that baby out of her body. We could probably help it to stay alive, and we could give it to a loving family. I know many loving families who are trying to have kids and cannot for one reason or another. Oh, the rats, they just procreate to no end.
Yeah.
California CCW issuing process is changing thanks to California's Attorney General. They no longer, California residents during their interview to get a permit no longer have to give a valid reason for wanting a permit other than being a great American. California is doing some really interesting things because it's like we all think California, we hate it so much. And then there's like there was Freedom Week and then there's this and then they expanded and opened up CCWs. And it's just like, wow, good news from California. You know what that means? That means people behind enemy lines are fighting the good fight.
Yeah. Finally.
And they're not giving up. It's not just finally. I think they've always been there. They're just not giving up against the tide of the Hollywood elite types that inhabit the place.
Yeah. Well, now they're all leaving.
Kudos to them.
All the Hollywood people are leaving.
No, kudos to them, too.
Texas. To pollute Texas.
I thought they were running away from the country. Every time they always say, like, if this passes, I'm going to leave the country. And then it passes, like, well, I'm not actually going to leave the country. I'm like, God damn it.
They can't. Supply and demand here, right?
Yeah.
They got to make them movies and then demand everybody pay them.
You know, there's a lot of scary Big Brother shit happening. Here's a story from China. Chinese officials weaponized COVID health tracker app to block political protests. If you're flagged as a potential COVID infection, your ability to use public transport and enter buildings is revoked. They also suspend access to your bank accounts.
What?
Because they require a digital passport to use public transport under the guise of preventing the spread of COVID. So they said you have to use this digital passport to spread, but then they revoke your passport if you're suspected being COVID, so you can't use public transport, shut down your bank accounts. China's leveraged this technology against all political protesters, of course, because that would prevent them from freely moving around the country.
Well, they are a communist country.
The point to this is that here's where people I have a problem with people saying it's like controlling abortions. Look, here's why I don't want the government involved in abortions, the federal government involved in abortions. Because if we let them have that, what do they get next? Look, I don't believe in abortion in this dumb fucking broad, whether stupid, I'm not a human yet or whatever. She's a fucking moron. She's a piece of shit. She probably doesn't have a good dad. She probably comes from a shitty fucking life. Her life fucking sucks. Fuck her. I don't give a shit. I still don't want the federal government up in anyone's business. I still don't fucking want. Even in that dumb bitch's life, I don't want the federal government fucking with her either.
What the funny thing about this whole thing is you – it just shows where the population is at, and you can't please them because they want the federal government controlling COVID stuff, but then they don't want federal government controlling.
Oh, body autonomy? Only when it has to do with. Oh, but hey, here's the benefit of all this. At least we're back to defining what a woman is. Because a few months ago, we weren't defining what a woman is.
Well, we're still.
But now we can't. No, 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 because now you can't tell a woman what she can do with her body.
Oh, that's right.
So at least we're defining what a woman is again.
Yeah. So there's men and women again.
There's that. And just like that, two genders again. Here's my problem with common sense control. When people talk about common sense gun control or common sense this or, well, the federal government, it just makes sense. No, it doesn't. Any good regulation is sold under the guise, under the premise of it, quote unquote, making sense. And that's a pretty serious freaking problem because it doesn't make sense. It makes sense to expand government control. I don't want to give them anything because historically, not just in America but in any country, all they have proven is that they will continue to take. They will continue to take. If you let them rule any part of your life, they will eventually rule all parts of your life. This story I just shared from China is a perfect example of that. Here's a wonderful example of what I'm talking about. Biden now telling oil companies, his solution to dealing with inflation is to tell oil companies to lower prices. He basically, the president of the United States, who by the way can't ride a fucking bicycle, writes an open-ended angry letter, a Karen letter to CEOs of oil companies saying you need to lower your prices. He assumes no responsibility for anything that he has done through policy or politics to cause this increase. It's insane. We don't want oil companies to lower their profit, to lower their prices. That is not what is the problem here. We want them to make money that incentivizes them to continue to produce oil. As long as we're still killing everyone who's making water-powered cars and we have to have oil-powered cars, well, then we must have this stuff. It just blows my freaking mind.
Yeah.
All they've been doing is pushing and pushing and pushing for green power energy sources, for the electric cars, for all that kind of shit, for years and years, which, by the way, consume way more friggin' oil than my truck does just to produce the damn things. The batteries are fucking poison to the earth and all that, but hey, let's talk about that. And now here they are trying to encourage people to use more gasoline. It's just so blatantly obvious who these people are and what they're up to.
Yeah.
It just blows my mind. It literally just... It helps you cut people out of your life, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
And it helps you really figure out who your people are as well. You know, like we're considering a new member of our instructor staff. We might expand a little bit. And I was riding around with him today doing some stuff and going and looking at a new training facility and doing some teaching for medicine and some other things. We're just talking to him about, you know, personal life stuff, everything from COVID to, you know, personal ideas of life. We were talking about abortion. We talked about a lot of things. It was like, anymore, that's almost how you have to like validate your potential relationships, whether business or personal. You know, I can only imagine like being in the dating market these days, right? If I was a hot single male. All right, I've been a single male before. I've never been a hot single male. But if I was a single guy. All right. And I was out there. I don't know. I just like some gal. Hey, how you doing? Yeah. Can I you got a vaccine card? You got vaccinated? Get the fuck away from me.
Well, we have an instructor that he dates on the dating websites and apps and whatever. And he had shared a couple stories about going on first dates and discussing vaccine stuff. Yeah. And then he was like, adios.
I'm out of here. Yeah, I'd be like, how you feel about guns? Oh, you think they're deadly? Okay, why don't you go fucking kill yourself with one? Get away from me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's anymore. I think how I could only validate. You know, like if I had to date people. Same thing with like, you know, interviewing this this potential new instructor where it's like, okay, well, you know, what's going on with this and how do you feel about this and what's that? It's like, what are your teaching skill sets? We'll get around to that. Are you going to fit on this team or not? Do you like liberty? Do you like personal liberty? Do you enjoy it? That's what I'm way more concerned about. Are you going to be a problem later? You know? It's insane. Redwire gear moment today, this week, I mean. Have good gloves everywhere you go.
Yes.
Especially in the heat, man. It is hot here in Arizona, like it is in many places. Mm-hmm. Things get spicy hot when they have been laying on the ground. Steel targets. Because I am kind of dumb sometimes, I have burned myself, cut myself, and done worse things to my hands, smashed them and everything else while moving targets around and doing my job and just touching hot things out in the sun that you just forget get so damn hot just because I'm like, I'm not going to put my gloves on. Let me just grab this thing real quick. Get good gloves. Personally, still a huge fan of the mechanics gloves. I love mechanics gloves. The pig gloves from SKD Tactical, also really good, but most of my gloves are still mechanics gloves. They're just so damn useful. And they're inexpensive, and they're great.
I have a pair of those sitting in my truck, mm-hmm. or my 4Runner, and then I have another pair in my range bag.
Hard to beat them, and they're cost-effective.
And it's nice when you got to unload shit or load shit, and it can be sharp, stabby, pointy, or pokey.
And people forget even when they're handling guns. I mean, during the summertime, and guns get hot. They get hot just sitting there, not even in the sun. Like a rifle on a table, just in the ambient heat of 115 degrees, gets hot. It's just hot.
Oh, you mean like it's going to get to 115 degrees?
Yeah, like something like that. It gets hot. And even more, if you've been shooting it, now it's not cooling down as much as it would be in other times of the year. So now it just stays hot all day long. It's like, you do a couple, you know, run and gun exercises, burn a couple mags. Okay, let's go back, reload, reach down, pick up your rifle. It's just as fucking hot as it was 10 minutes ago.
Yep.
So wear good gloves. Get a good set of gloves.
Yep.
Redwire Gear Moment. And train in them. For sure. Redwire Gear Moment brought to you by redwiregear.com. Okay. Topic for the day. It's going to be kind of a long one. But we'll be able to finish in time, but that's why I kind of bumped over some of the early stuff so I get right to this. How to create failure points and keep yourself accountable in solo training. How to create failure points and keep yourself accountable in solo training. This was a outline that was sent to us by a student who had requested a similar type of show earlier this year. And now we're going to – and then was like, hey, thanks for the show. Let me send you some more questions. So we're going to answer some of those questions today. How to move from slow, deliberate, and conscious practice to less thoughtful movements. And this is what the process is often called, going from being consciously incompetent, you know what you don't know, to being consciously competent, I must think about what I'm doing so I do it right, to being unconsciously competent, meaning I no longer have to do it or think about it to do it. So it's like watching a baby eat food. Mm-hmm. And learn how to eat food. And at first they are sort of, kind of, you know, consciously incompetent.
They completely are.
Well, and maybe I would add before this, I believe there's this another level that's actually you are unconsciously incompetent. Like you don't know that you don't know, but you think you know, but you fucking don't. And so, yeah, you watch a baby try to eat just like fucking food all over the place, right? They're kind of unconsciously incompetent. They don't really understand what they don't understand.
Yeah.
Then they become consciously incompetent. They're like, I really want to achieve this goal. I really want to feed myself.
Looking at them pick up a spoon, they don't have those motor skills yet. So they grab everything with their whole hand versus if you were just picking something up with your couple fingers, it's...
And that's where they start to move into conscious competence. Yes. They're like, okay, I can now pick up the spoon.
Like you see those kids like really concentrating on picking.
Massive amounts of concentration just to move my hand from this part of my body to that part of the spoon and then pick that up. Now I got to dip it. Then I got to put it in my mouth. Like it is a strenuous activity. Anyone who's ever watched a baby, it's incredible. I love being a dad, and I love teaching kids. I am too old for that shit. All our kids are older now. I'm glad I don't have to work with the little tiny babies anymore. It's not really – I'm kind of beyond that point in my life. It's not really what I want to do anymore. But I will say one of my favorite parts of being a dad was watching my kids learn how to do the simplest task, because the amount of concentration – I'm like, man, if I could get my students to put that much concentration in doing something – damn, could I build some shooters. But they're trying to just make that thing happen. And then eventually they get to the level of unconscious competence where now we talk and we read a book and eat ice cream with a spoon. You don't fucking think about it anymore. That's unconscious competence. So how do you move from that slow, deliberate, conscious practice to less thoughtful movements or follow that conscious competence kind of concept? Well, here's my opinion on it as an instructor. The first step is realizing that you are making mistakes in your movements. And to really truly see that, you need either the watchful eye of a professional instructor or educator or someone who can watch you and analyze you. You need to video yourself so that you can watch yourself. And that's going to be from multiple angles, doing this thing from, you know, multiple different ways. That way you can really get a good assessment of yourself. So you have to see what you're doing wrong. Then you have to break those movements down to their finer points. And then you have to slowly and deliberately do them perfectly. Practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes permanent. Perfect practice makes perfect. Shitty practice makes shit. And I see a lot of people shitty practice get shit results. Look how shitty I am. Yes, you're fantastic at being shitty.
Well, it's the same thing with like going to the gym and lifting weights properly. There's a proper way to do it, and the best way to learn is to practice properly lifting those weights. And then there's what do the people always make fun of? The people that always do things really fast and never do them accurately. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
There's like something that you call it.
I don't know, fools? I have no idea.
I don't know. It's like a whole program that there's a classification of these people.
I have no idea.
I'll think of
spazoids.
It. No.
So watch someone who's really good at anything, right?
Like
any skill. You know, watch a baseball player warm up swinging. Watch a football player warm up, you know, throwing. or running.
Yeah.
Now, watch a really good shooter warm up with his presentation. When they're practicing, when they're warming up, they do things incredibly slow. Specifically, watch a power lifter walk up to a bar and just lift the bar.
Yeah.
You know, and he's making sure he's got perfect form so before he adds any weights, he doesn't fuck this up.
Yep.
So break it down to its finer points and then pay really close attention to what you're doing specifically. Like every single movement is like, I will do this, I will hold my wrists like this, or I will flex my arm like this, or I will bend my knees like this, or I will arch my back like this, or I will move my head like this. Whatever it is, that's the fine particular movement, and you are going to have to repeat this now thousands of times. On average, they say it takes 1,000 repetitions roughly before something doesn't have to be diagnosed to the finer points. It takes about 3,000 reps before something can start becoming muscle memory, or what we like to call reflexive response. And it takes about 10,000 reps before something is truly a reflexive response. And that 3 to 10,000 is even more important if you're trying to overcome something else that you've been doing, especially if you've done it thousands and thousands of times. I mean, imagine, I know I've talked about this on the show before, but it's like imagine having to try to eat with a fork differently now.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Well, and the other thing I would add on to that is videoing yourself so you can watch proper technique. And then as you know that you are doing the proper technique, get to know what your body feels like in those certain positions and the movements, because your body will feel very particular. And then that way you can know if you're in the right position or not based off of how you're coming up and going out from the elevator to the escalator. Just by so many reps, you'll know exactly how your body movement feels when you're in the correct position.
And any training is going to be about removing variables. So any good training is removing a variable of some kind, right? We do shooting training because we are trying to get better at the shooting part of a fight. We do physical fitness because we're trying to get better at the survival or strength or cardio or endurance part of whatever it is that we're training for, right? If we go and we practice running before a race, we typically are practicing the type of running, excuse me, that you're going to see or have to do in that race.
But when you practice right before a race, you slow way, way down.
Slow everything down. So the next question is, how do you piecemeal out different sections of a given sequence? And as an example, they said acquiring a good sight picture, then integrating that into the larger pattern, such as, you know, drawing the gun, presenting it, seeing that sight picture, and then breaking that shot. And this is something I see a lot of people have a hard time with, is breaking it down into these piecemeals, because they'll be like, man, you know, I'm really good at getting a good sight picture. I'm really good at presenting the gun. but they're not good at getting a sight picture along the way. And then I go, okay, show me. And then they go as fast as they possibly can. And I go, okay, what'd you see? What do you mean? Well, what'd you see? What did you see? You're trying to see a sight picture, right? Yeah, well, okay, what'd you see? Well, I saw my sights at the end. Okay, well, that's a problem, right? We want to see our sights along the way. So let's piecemeal it down. All I want you to do now is present from your, you know, collarbone, high center chest out. And as you find sights along the way, get a better sight picture. That means sight alignment on the target. Okay, then make that determination to press the trigger. Don't even worry about putting your finger on the trigger. Don't worry about pressing the trigger. Just find that good solid sight picture. This is what it looks like when your brain says yes. See that good sight picture? That means good sight alignment on a target. This is what it looks like when your brain says yes, it's time to press the trigger. Okay, now come back. Now repeat that perfect movement 3,000 times.
Yeah.
Perfectly. And then let's worry about incorporating it into the whole thing. Some people will be like, okay, cool, I did it 5 times. I'm ready. I'm like, easy there, Bruce Lee, Mr. I threw 5 fucking punches. What do you think is going to happen next? You're not going to throw that punch very effectively. So settle down. All right? Like Bruce Lee said, I don't fear the man who's thrown 10,000 punches one time. I fear the man who's thrown one punch 10,000 times. I mean, he's really fucking good at that one punch. All he's got to do is land it. He's damn good at it. It's perfect. It's going to be perfect. Flawless even. So when you're trying to incorporate something, a little smaller part, when you're trying to overcome a thing, I watch people go, okay, trigger press. All right, present. Show me your trigger press. Okay, that's a good trigger press. Okay, do it again, right? Present, show me that trigger press. Okay, that looks good. That looks good. Can you feel this? Can you feel that? Okay, excellent. All right, now, you're ready? You're going to do it on your own now, okay? You ready? Go. Hit. And bam, fast as they fucking can, they draw the gun.
Sounds like me.
And I'm like, dude, what the fuck are you doing? Do you fucking even listen to anything I'm saying?
Are we talking about me at the range?
I wasn't specifically thinking about you while specifically thinking about you. But it's like, dude, slow it down. Not slow everything down, not slow down totally, but there's this one thing that you need to chill the fuck out on, and it's finding your sight picture, or it's that good smooth trigger press, or it's acquiring that two-handed grip. I see people trying to add speed. I'll tell you how to piecemeal shit. Slow the fuck down. And I don't mean slow it all down. I mean, what's the thing you're trying to fix? Now, what does slow down mean? Slow down means that physically you're going to go slower so that you can make sure you're not adding any extra steps. So you can make sure that you're not adding movement that doesn't need to be there, which technically, when you go faster, will still slow you down. Doing one movement slowly in 5 steps or doing one movement quickly in 15 steps, the fast, quick 15-step movement is obviously going to be slower than the 5-step movement. And I watch people just spaz out, move super fast on the range, and the guns come out of the holster, they can't find their sights, fingers on the triggers, sword kind on the target, they're running around, bah, 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 they fucking missed a steal 3 times, get, bing, oh yeah, I got a hit, and then they run away, and I'm like, dude, that was a 5-step process you just did in 15 fucking steps. Like, whoa. Come back here. Now, what does slow down do? Slow down means physically take the time to make sure you're doing the steps properly. You know this person at work. This is that person at work who works all day, doesn't get shit done. It's because they're doing something. They've got 100 processes for something you could do in 3 steps. Or they're getting distracted. I started this project, and I started this project. A little project arsonist, right? Running around the job site, just starting little projects. And the next thing you know, you've got 1,000 fucking projects that are partially completed. And at the end of the day, they haven't accomplished anything. Why do they do that? Because they can't stay focused on a thing. They're so busy thinking about the next thing, they can't focus on this thing, and that is the same exact thing that shooters do. They're so damn focused on the next shot, they can't focus on this one. We see it fighting on the mats all the time. Some guy, look, it is kind of a game of chess. You do want to be predicting your opponent's moves a little bit, but guys are like, oh man, as soon as he does this, I'm going to sink this move. The next thing you're getting choked out. What happened? I don't know, man, I was going in for this move. Okay. What were you thinking about? Well, I was thinking about as soon as I did that, oh, there's your problem. You fucked this up. We see it hunting all the time. I'll watch a guy go out hunting with somebody, especially when I was doing a lot of predator hunting and guiding people, not guiding people, take them out hunting. And I'd take him out. They'd blow a shot. I walk up to him. What happened? Man, I don't know. He was right in my sights. Okay. What do you think happened? Well, I was so excited. It was this thing. Here's the problem, man. You were holding that thing up, taking a photo with it, sending it to your friends long before the animal was even dead on the ground. You were taking your hero shots, getting that thing taxidermied and putting it on the wall before you'd ever even press the trigger. You were so excited about the next step in the process, the result, that you got lost in the process. You started adding steps. You started making mistakes. You started skipping steps. Started forgetting about stuff. Started rushing things that can't be rushed. You made those mistakes because you're 3 steps ahead. Be right here. Be right here. Be right now. And maybe it's easier for some people to, you know, we kind of joke on classes, like it's easier for guys to clear our minds. Our lady students are thinking about 800 things. Our guys are thinking about 2 things, what they're doing and boobs probably. So it's important to consider, like, bring your mind to where you are. Piecemeal it that way. I am only working on my sight picture. I'm only working on how I hold the ball. I throw the ball. Oh, I didn't get the exact result. I know you're working on how you throw the ball. Yeah, but I didn't throw it as far this time. It's okay. You're working on how you hold the ball so you can throw it farther later. Yeah, but I didn't throw it as far as this time. Okay, throw the ball however the fuck you want.
It's the same concept. You could apply this concept in basically anything and everything that you do in everyday life. It's the same thing for running. When you're working on your form, you run slow as shit. Mm. And when you're working on speed, you run slow as shit. If you're working on endurance, you run slow as shit. Mm. it's very rarely do you just go out and go balls to the wall when you're running, unless you're Glenn and go out.
I don't know how any other way to run. I hate this. If I run faster, it's over sooner. That's all I know.
Yeah.
How to find and create failure points in solo practice is the next question. How to find and create failure points.
Go faster with time.
Not necessarily.
Speed things up.
Determine what you're trying to accomplish in the first place. What do you want? Is going faster your result? Well, then, yeah, you have to go faster. Is that the desired result? Is being more accurate your result if you're shooting? What if I'm trying to throw that ball better? What's my result? What if I'm trying to shoot that arrow better? What if I'm trying to XYZ, right? Whatever the physical mm-hmm. skill you're trying to lift more weight, whatever it is. You have to figure out what your desired result is well before you start trying to figure out what the process is to create failure points. It's people, it's a thing we commonly deal with in shooting. I'm really good trying to figure out what my failure points are. Okay? What are you after? I just want to be a better shooter. What the fuck does that mean? You want to be more accurate? You want to be faster? What do you want to be? You want to be a better shooter with more platforms? You want to be a better shooter with different calibers? You want to be a better shooter fucking off a horseback? What do you want to be? How do you want to be a fucking better shooter? Figure out the result you're after, and then you can start to figure out how to create failure points. So if I want to be a faster shooter, as an example, then my very first failure point should be, well, how fast can't I go? So find a exercise or a shooting drill that focuses on speed, something like a 1-to-5 drill or a build drill or a El Presidente or something that has a preset standard. Get yourself those exact targets, set it up at that exact distance. Don't alter anything from how it's supposed to be done or you're going to fuck this up. Set it up exactly like it's supposed to be set up and then do it. And do it faster and faster and faster and faster and faster until eventually you hit the point where you can't do it anymore. And then check that about 5 times in a row and make sure you didn't just make a mistake, but that indeed this is where you hit the wall. And now you know how fast you can't go. And now we have a place to work towards. And now we can go back and analyze and say, okay, one, where am I making these mistakes? And what is costing me time? Mm-hmm. Two, is it possible for me to get faster? Because that's a thing we have to find in failure points. Everyone's physical capability, mental capacity, and maybe even performance based on tools alone is going to change what their potential failure points are. So you have to determine beforehand, what am I trying to get to? And now, is it physically possible for me to get to that point? It may not be. And you're only going to find that out by trying to get to that point. So you want to create a failure point, identify what you're trying to fail at. I'll give you guys an example. Right now, I despise running as always, but because I despise it, I'm trying to improve on it. I'm doing some things in life right now that – a couple things that I don't really like doing, but I'm trying to do them to make sure that I can get some self-improvement out of it. analyzing things. I'm kind of working on some of these – utilizing some of these concepts. So right now I'm trying to break a certain runtime. I can break that runtime, but only after a certain mileage point. And I can break that runtime before that mileage point, but it hurts too much. And my recovery time is like insane afterwards. Like it really fucking hurts me. And I can reach this other point after a certain time. So what I'm doing is I'm running at this right on the ragged edge of where I hurt myself because I want to see, is it physically possible for me with my injury considerations and my current physical condition and everything else to get to that point? And if it is, am I hitting a point of diminishing return? Am I going to work super, super hard to hit this point and then not be able to maintain it? Am I going to work really, really hard to hit this point and then injure myself forever? Am I going to work really, really hard to hit this point and then maybe be able to push beyond it and go further? I don't know. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm working to create this failure point. But I know what my goal is, before I tried to find a failure point, I decided what my goal was. This is what I want the results to be, so that I can go back and go, okay, now I'm going to start charting my progress. I'm going to run, you know, a couple miles at least at a time so I can see what's my 1 and 2 mile time. You know, if I can run more, great, but at least run a couple. That way I can see what my first mile time is, what my second mile time is. See if there's a consistency in which one is faster. See if there's a consistency in my first mile time and my second mile time. Is there a consistency when I'm tired? I run all the time. I run when I'm tired. Sometimes I run at 11:30 at night after I've worked all day long. I'll teach a class all day in the sun, hang out with the kids, eat dinner, do the family thing. Everyone starts to, you know, simmer down, go to bed, whatever. I go for a run. Sometimes I do that because that's the time I've got. Can I maintain this failure point, this near failure point, when it's 11:30 and I've been working on the sun all day? Can I maintain that point when I first get up in the morning? Can I maintain it if I'm not really feeling good? I go out when I don't want to do it. That's when I definitely go out and do it, because now I definitely know I'm going to be right there on the ragged edge of that failure point, because I don't even want to fucking do this. I mean, it's hard for me to self-motivate to get out and run in the first place, not to mention get out and run real fucking hard. And so I'm out there trying to push myself no matter what the circumstances are to see if I can maintain. Here's what I've discovered, just so you guys can use this as a basis. I can maintain my same speed even if I don't want to, even if I'm not feeling good, even if I'm super tired, even if I'm really dehydrated, even if it's raining. I know I can do this. So now that I've discovered right to that ragged edge where my failure point is, and I know what my goal is, now I can go back and start analyzing myself and go, what is causing me to not run faster? Why can't I consistently break this number? But I can't do that analysis until I've identified my results that I want, until I've identified what I'm trying to accomplish and how I'm going to accomplish it, and I've identified that, yes, indeed, this is right now my constant. Not I went out one time and did it. Because one night I went out and ran as hard as I could, and I blew my number way out of the water, and I was like not in good shape for about 45 minutes afterwards. It was like not feeling. I was like wheezing, and it was hard on me. It was really hard on me. And so I'm like, okay, that was too much. I don't get any benefit from that. Oh, look, I can do it. Yes, so I can't do it again. I can't do it consistently. Maybe in the future I can get back to that point consistently, but we got to start where we're at right now.
Baby steps.
Baby steps. So the second question then is, well, how do I hold on. I'm going to read this real quick for this listener. Oh, never mind. Okay. How do we add stress and different types of stress? What are different types of stress that we want to work on overall in our activity? Okay, let's use running again.
I would say weather.
Weather is a great stress. It's hot as fuck out there in Arizona. It's over 100 degrees every freaking day. We've had humidity really high lately, so it's like, oh, it's only 102 with 65, 70% humidity. Like, yeah, or oh, it's 115 with 20% humidity. Like, we are fighting the weather. It's hot. It's hot, hot, hot. So that's a way to add stress. Being tired. Mm-hmm. Not feeling very good. Right? I'm just kind of like, oh, man, I'd rather just lay down, go to bed or something. Nope, do it. Early in the morning, late in the evening, middle of the day. Try it during different times when you're feeling differently.
When you have a full belly, when you're starving, all of those ways can be great for being under stress, so to say. Yep. Out of your comfort of just being in perfect weather, perfect gear, perfect everything.
Cognitive load.
Yeah.
Can I do this while I'm listening to music? Can I do it when I'm not? I've tested it. Does it make a difference? Does music – I like to listen to music when I run because I fucking hate running, but I like listening to music. So if I'm listening to music while I run, does that change
also
my speed?
It also depends. So there's actually – not to go down a rabbit hole or anything, but there's actually a lot of research behind listening to certain types of music because it gives you a beat to run to, a tempo to run to. So it also depends on which type of music are you listening to.
there's other cognitive load things I can put myself under. When Drew and I are running together, we often talk. So now, well, I talk.
I listen.
Shockingly. I'm also good. I like to talk when I'm running because I'm used to cadence. It's something that was beat into me a long time ago, and cadence is good for
well,
it. Helps you breathe.
You should be able to hold a conversation while you're running. That's when you know that's where your comfort of running is. If you can't hold a conversation, rule of thumb is you're going too fast. If you have a conversation, a long-winded conversation, you might be running too slow. So that's where a good rule of thumb.
So I look at that kind of stuff. Okay, cognitive load. Can I do this? Can I, you know, hold a conversation that requires me to really put some thought into something and it's not just small talk like I would with some of our running group. I'm just chit-chatting with them. But with Drew, I'm having more in-depth conversations. How does that affect my running time? You know, we have one runner in our group. He's very fast. He's very consistent. He's been running forever. And so the way I think about it is when I'm running with him, I like the cognitive load. I like to talk with him while I run because he's fast. He's way faster than I am. And if I talk with him while I'm running, I can kind of keep up with him. I can maintain a pretty good pace with him as long as I'm talking with him, even if it's just shallow, normal talk. So I look at those kinds of, we'll say, quote-unquote, cognitive load issues. Start looking at other things like, again, we'll just stay with running because we're talking about it. Let's look at resistance. All right? Let's talk about clothing. If I change my clothing, if I change my shoes, if I change the terrain, what if I go run on trails? What if I run on a road? What if I run on a dirt road? What if I run at different elevations? Running in Prescott and running in Flagstaff and running at home are all different things. So how does that change my time, or how does that change the results that I'm trying to get? All of those things matter. And if we want to take that and put it into shooting, all right, if I'm adding stress, look at what you're stressing, because very unrealistically, a lot of instructors especially will say, well, you know, we're going to add this stress or this pressure to this to simulate, you know, combative environments. No, we're not. We're not doing that. That doesn't work. Not like this. Not at this level. What we're stressing now is the performance of the skill, right? We're looking at the difference right now between technique and tactic, and I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but there's a difference between applications and skills, all right? We're looking at the stressing of a skill. The stressing of a skill being things we do in like advanced tandem, which is a class we just taught this last weekend. Great, I can do it two hands, but can I do it one hand? Can I do it one hand with my other side? Can I do it at close quarters? Can I do it from 25 meters? Can I do it from behind cover? Can I do it from unconventional shooting positions? Can I do it on the move in all those environments? Now we're talking about stressing that skill. None of that. I'm yelling in someone's ear, throwing brass at them, yelling at them in a bullhorn, all this other silly shit. People see, we're flipping tires, we're dragging dummies around. Everyone's hey, yelling and screaming, whatever. That shit doesn't add stress. It adds cognitive load, but that's not this kind of stress. That's not the stress that simulates combat. That doesn't stress tactics. That stresses technique. Under some type of cognitive load, incoming processes, can I effectively perform the skill? So your stress then should replicate the kind of stresses that you might encounter in those environments. Like if I'm going to go run a race with Drew, and I'm going to be preparing for that race, I need to wear the types of clothes. I need to wear the types of shoes. I need to run the type of terrain. I need to run at the type of elevation. I need to replicate the environments I expect myself to perform at and then, quote unquote, stress those as much as possible during that process. That way, I don't end up with unknown variables because, and to circle back to what we were talking about in the beginning, training's all about removing variables. I'm trying to remove variables. So I'm not a fan of people saying that they're adding stress by, you know, doing all these crazy, silly run around, yell, wear plate carriers. Yeah, I like to wear plate carriers in the summertime because it stresses me out. Okay, it stresses your body out. Mm-hmm. Now, if that's what you're trying to accomplish, if you're like, I want to see if my body can take all this extra weight, I'm trying to fit it so it doesn't chafe me, you know, I'm making sure I can access my equipment, you know, I'm kind of working things out here, okay, and I want to see if I can handle this, okay, that's cool. But no, it doesn't simulate any kind of, you know, strenuous circumstance. It's just you stressing your body, stressing your physical skills to see if they work.
I don't know why how people do that. We were at the range one time, and there was a training group that were screaming, yelling at people in their ears.
It's dumb.
To me,
it's theatrics. It's just theatrics.
I would honestly laugh because I can easily just tone people out. So I would just laugh and be like, whatever, man. Like, that doesn't – whatever. You look ridiculous. Stop doing that. I mean, and it was funny because a bunch of our students, it was at lunch when it was happening, and a bunch of our students went over there and just started laughing at these people. Like, what are they doing? That proves nothing, that someone's screaming in your ear. Yeah, I mean, people tone people out all the time. People tone their spouses out. People tone out their neighbors.
Someone screaming at you isn't creating stress.
No.
It is creating cognitive load, but that just means I'm going to be slower in my actions potentially because I'm processing shit.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that I'm stressed out. It just means I got to process some shit.
Yeah, so now you're taking time to listen to what they're saying versus doing the thing that needs to be done. I don't know. Me, I would just – I don't know how people do that. I would just sit there and laugh and be like, you guys are fucking retarded.
So the next question from this listener then is, so what works for you – what works best for you personally? What works best for me to create failure points is realistically – I assess what I'm trying to accomplish. Like, I'll be brutally honest with you guys, I barely practice shooting anymore. Not because I can't improve, but because my level of improvement will be so incredibly incrementally small that until I find a way to truly challenge myself, and it's out there, I'm looking for it, all right? But until I find a way to truly challenge myself, and it's not like, look up Billy Bob's, you know, basketball in the hoop, fucking Delta Force challenge. I'm not interested in shooting some masturbatory range drill. That's not going to improve my overall capabilities. Look, here's the facts. If I present a gun to a target, I'm hitting it. It's rare I just flat out fucking miss shit anymore. I've been doing this professionally for a long fucking time. I assess shooters all the fucking time. It's all I do. I'm constantly assessing myself. I do very quick baseline assessments on myself, 10, 12 rounds maybe. Once I realize I'm good, I stop.
Yeah.
So how do I find failure points? For me, the devil's in the details. Failure point I realized recently, I'm slower than I used to be coming out of the holster.
We were just talking about that the other day.
I'm still fast, but I'm slower than I used to be coming out of the holster. That's a failure point for me right now. I identified it because I was actually watching another student, a different student of ours, do it. And I was watching him, like, he's really fast. And I'd been working on him with his sight picture and assessment and everything. And then I walked up next to him during class and I go, hey, do me a favor. When I say hit it, and I even had the advantage here because I know I'm going to say hit it. I'm like, no hand on gun, hand on belt line, dry pistol presented to the target. And he beat me. Like 2 out of 3 times. And I was like, and he's fast. He's good. He's a good shooter. He has a lot of other training and experience compared to me, you know? But I was like, man, I'm slower than I used to be, right? So let me use this litmus test of this other guy that I think might be faster than me. And then I watched him for the rest of the day. You know, we're just doing our normal shit, right? And I'm watching him as he's running exercises, and I'm watching the way his arms are moving. I'm watching the way he's working. I'm like, okay, I'm doing all these things. I know I am. I video myself. Like, I know I'm doing it. Physically, my process is slower. I'm just moving slower. And it's not that I'm getting old. I know that's what you're going to say. It's because I'm not dry practicing. I'm not shooting. Let me take that back. It has nothing to do with dry practice. I'm not shooting under a competitive environment as much as I used to.
This is true.
I'm not shooting as much in an environment where speed was my God, and I had to push it as hard as I fucking could to win. And so because of that, and now everything I'm doing is more fighting-based where I'm buying time. So now I've kind of changed my mindset. I'm buying time to draw my pistol instead of beep, and I have to draw the gun as fast as possible. So that's a failure point I recognized. So then the second part of the question is, well, then how do I keep myself accountable to that? Well, I ask myself, how much time, energy, and effort do I need to put into this to improve? Is this worth improving? So after everyone left, I'm like, I'm going to draw my pistol and shoot it as fast as I can. From concealment, on a torso, fist-sized group, high center chest. I'm going to do it 5 times, as fast as I fucking can. And in a fist-sized group, high center chest, about 5 yards or so. I didn't pace it, but I'd guess it at about 5 yards. I was 1.2 seconds, 1.3 seconds. I'm like, okay. I don't care about the sub-second shit. Is this worth going faster? Is this worth the time, energy, and effort to get back to where I used to be? Is it worth it? Probably fucking not. It's probably not fucking worth it. Not at this point in what I'm doing. So that's the second part of the question. How to hold myself accountable? Is this worth it? How about running? Let's go back to that for a second. And this is more important because I hate it. I like shooting. I don't like running. So I'm running the other night, and I'm thinking to myself, why are you doing this? What's motivating you right now? Why do you want to do this? I'd started this little temporary running journey off that I'm on right now because I wanted to run every day. And I have almost perfectly run every day. I've only missed a couple days. And it was essentially almost impossible to have accomplished that reasonably. But even when we were out of town, or even when we've been out of state, I've still done it. Even when I'm tired and it's 11:30 and I've still done it. Even when it's raining, I still did it. Even when I had to get up early to do it so I could do it before work, I still did it. Like, I'm still doing it. So why am I doing this? And I realized how I was holding myself accountable. I am building trust in myself. That I will do the things that I said I was going to do. I said I was going to do this thing, and I'm doing it. Even when it hurts, even when it's no fun, even when I don't want to, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it until I trust that I will do these things like this all the time, every time. And that may be the rest of my life I may be doing this. I don't know. That's part of how I'm holding myself accountable, is by making sure that I build the trust in myself to do this. Let me rewind to shooting. You know how I got so good? I did it when other people didn't want to.
Yeah.
I traveled all over the fucking country shooting competitions and doing well and winning. I pressed harder. I shot before classes. I shot after classes. When I was traveling up and down the road, I brought targets with me. I'd pull over on the side of the road when I was, you know, an hour away from a range, you know, from my home to a range. And I would pull over on the side of the road where it was safe and legal to do so, of course. And I would shoot shooting exercises. And I would video myself. And I would analyze myself on a cardboard box on the, you know, safe distance away from the fucking freeway. And then I'd clean everything up and jump back in the car. And I did that every day for weeks, for months, for years. And I went to classes as a student, and I learned. I put my own time and energy and effort and ammo into it. I have shot tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of rounds perfectly. I have dry practiced. I have built that trust in myself that I know I will do the thing it must be done when it comes to improving that skill. I'm not as determined with that with my fitness. That's why I trust myself with my shooting way more than I trust myself with my fitness, because I've let myself down with my fitness before. I didn't quite follow through on it. I got busy. I didn't go to the gym as much, whatever. Now this is a thing I can do. I want to build that trust back in myself. So I'm holding myself accountable. I don't want to be held accountable to somebody else. Sometimes that's where it starts. You know, it started with the running thing where Drew and I kind of said, okay, we're going to run every day, together. This is what we're going to do. And then as scheduling conflicts and Drew's knee injury and some other things came up, it was like, okay, I have a choice here. I can either not do this or I can still do it. So I can learn to trust myself in this again. So for me, my accountability came from the desire to be better with that. Now, a slightly related question here from this listener is, how do you make the best use of partners? Make sure that your partner has the same result, desired result in mind. Because if you want to run to improve your physical fitness, or like me, you want to run to learn how to trust yourself with fitness again, and I'm fit. I can't even say I'm not where I want to be. I know I can be better. But your partner is training for the Boston fucking marathon, then probably you don't have the same result in mind. And you're going to get disappointing results. It's always like when people tell me, oh yeah, I got really good at shooting. My uncle was a Navy SEAL. And I go, okay. Yeah. So he taught me how to shoot. And you go, okay. What the fuck does that have to do with anything? Were you shooting like a Navy SEAL? Did he run you through hundreds and hundreds of days of shooting courses? Did he drill you into hostage rescue and CQC training and shooting off of moving platforms and aerial gunnery? Oh, he didn't do any of that? And then shut the fuck up. Your training partner and you did not have the same result than mine. He took you shooting so that you would learn to not shoot him accidentally. You know what I mean? Or he wanted to impart on you some level or understanding of his skill set. You would be shooting for 3 or 4 hours and you were like, it's kind of hot. We should go get a burger. And this guy's like, oh, kind of hot. We should go get a burger. You know what I mean? This guy went through a fucking 9 or 12 week selection process and you bitched out after 3 to 4 hours. I don't give a fuck if you went shooting with your partner who was a Navy SEAL or whatever. You went running with a guy. I used to run with a guy who was a marathon runner. Well, do you run marathons? Then shut the fuck up. Unless you were training for the same result. Are you trying to run marathons? Are you trying to shoot like a Navy SEAL? Are you trying to become a Navy SEAL? Make sure your training partner has the same results as you. That person who's running with you because they used to run marathons probably either A, used to and no longer does, and so is just looking for someone to casually run with, or B, is just trying to help you get better at running. And probably what you don't see is that person who runs marathons, who you run with, and you're like, yeah, I ran. Yeah, we ran like 6 miles. Yeah, well, then after you left, they ran another 16. Or that was their third run of the day. Or their 12th run of the week. My point is, it's good to have training partners that are better than you. I'm not saying don't. But if you want to get the most out of it, make sure you're aligning your results. Your desired results should match. Otherwise, you're not going to get the desired result out of it, in my personal opinion. So the last little bit that we'll talk about here, how to create effective practice habits and how to identify standards. We've talked about this at length on the show.
Yeah.
At great length. And what I'm trying to do here is add extra to this show that we had already done. We've already answered these questions in another show. These were just additional kind of fleshed out questions that this listener had. First of all, how to identify standards. I'll just go back to, what are you trying to accomplish? You cannot create standards with trying to figure out what you're trying to accomplish. We do it all the time in training. People go like, well, what's acceptable action? I don't know what you're trying to do. Are you trying to two anywhere USPSA, IDPA hit this motherfucker? Are you trying to stack bullets on top of this a la NRA bullseye shooting? Are you trying to fist-size group anywhere on this dude's, you know, vertical stripe for self-defense? What are you trying to accomplish? Then we can set a standard. Until you tell me what you want to accomplish, I can't set a standard for you. I take a brand new shooter out, I put a piece of copy paper on a blank backboard and go, let's just hit the fucking copy paper. That's fucking fun. It's fun to shoot. Let's have some fun. Let's shoot. What's the standard? Fun. What's the result? Fun. What's our goal? Fun. Safe. Fun. Cool. We can now pull the gun out of the case. We can load it. We can shoot it. We can unload it. We can put it back. We can maintain it. And we can hit a piece of copy paper at 5, 7, 10 yards. Awesome. Rad. Now what do you want to do next? Because that's going to determine where we go from here. Just create standards. You got to know desired results. We focus on the process so that we get the desired results, but without knowing the desired results, we can't build the process. And to me, that's also how you really create effective practice habits. This has to be something that you want to do. You have to internally decide why you want to do this thing. And it's got to be visceral. I've always really liked, you know, Drew's reason for getting involved in running, because she wanted to be able to carry her kid out of harm's way or back to safety. What a visceral decision. What's something you can grab onto that? You can hold on to that when the day is long and you don't want to run. When you're tired from work and you don't want to run. When you're not feeling good and you don't want to run, that's a thing I can grab onto. And I can pull that out from the depths and say, this is the reason I'm running, so I can push harder. I can run a little faster. I can push a little harder. I can keep going. So to me, I create effective practice habits because I have a visceral reason for doing so. Otherwise, I don't practice much. I don't practice shooting much anymore. I maintain my standard, my skills, which at this point in my career, I'm happy to say are very high. And I don't practice much anymore. I'm not competing as much as I used to. I'm not competing at the level I used to. And so I don't really have a reason to just masturbatorily shoot 0.10 second or 0.1 second faster on the fucking time clock. Don't need that now. I'm happy where I'm at. It's very effective, very good at what I do. But there's other things in my life I'm improving. I'm improving my medicine. I'm improving my running. I'm improving my eating. I'm improving my diet right now. Those are the places I need to. And how do I create effective habits there? Because I want to be as healthy as possible. I want to be as capable as I am now when my boys are 18. I want to be as capable as I am right now when Drew and I want to go hiking and we're 70. That's my visceral reason. I want to be hard to kill. Anyway, hope this helped you guys out with some ideas about how to create failure points and how to keep yourself accountable. Look, we could go on forever with this topic. I could talk for hours about all the things I've learned about teaching people. I mean, I can't sum that up in 45 minutes. I just can't. But if you guys have some specific questions about things, please, just like we already answered today, send them over. info@trainingaz.com. I'd love to answer your questions as much as we possibly can. Drew would love to answer. When Dave's back, he'll answer some questions. We'd love to chat with you guys about other ways to create failure points and keep yourself accountable. Our independence training moment for this week: what did Drew and Glenn do this past week to better prepare any of the four zones for an emergency? Well, as we've been doing a lot lately, we focused on our kids and we helped them to learn Arizona's history, but also taught them about governments and the corruption of governments and the fear and how powerful the fear can be. And basically, this happened a couple weeks ago, but we took them down to Tombstone and we went down and toured Tombstone. We learned a lot about the corruption that happens behind the scenes when people in power want to stay in power, and how the media forever has always been driving the narrative based on what benefits them the most. Then we went over to one of the Titan missile silos, and one of the only Titan missile silos, I believe, or maybe the only one, still in perfect condition. And we took them down on the big tour. That's very awesome. And we taught them about, look at this giant missile. This missile was aimed at a city full of innocent people, potentially, or maybe a military target somewhere, I don't know, in another part of the world. This is power. And this is why we have to control governments. This is why we can't allow governments to get out of control, because it's the power that they have, and war is an ugly thing. And the threat of war is an ugly thing. And this is why maintaining peace through superior firepower, through the threat of superior firepower, is so important. That's what we did. Independence Training Moment brought to you by independencetraining.com, or if it's easier for you, trainingaz.com. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you. Get hosting information about bringing us out to your area. info@trainingaz.com is the the email address. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, Red Wire Gear, MRC Phoenix, and PMA Scottsdale, or Premier Martial Arts Scottsdale, Dave Bravo's gym. We are proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Be sure to check out the other wonderful services, shows, and capabilities that the media group has next week. It's 4th of July. It's going to be a pre-recorded show. We're all pre-recorded now, but I mean it's going to be pre-recorded even before the 4th of July, because we are going to be at the Independence Day Action Rifle Match, which is now 3 slots we have left?
Yeah.
I think 2 or 3 slots we have left for Independence Day Action Rifle Match, so damn near full. Probably be full, I'm guessing, within the next 48 hours. So if you're not in and you want to get in, you better get in right now. But next week, you guys asked for it. Now you got it. I'm going to give you some rants on liberty. And some things I'm feeling kind of passionate about these days. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.